Welcome to Life Quest, a program that directs you to subjects and books that will make a difference in your life. A program that will make you think and strengthen your journey of faith in the 21st century. My name is Dwight Lainhoff. Today on Life Quest, I'm talking with Daniel Allen Jr. He's the executive director of Canterbury Communities in Dallas, Texas. He's a coach and consultant for emerging and established leaders. He's an author. He's been a pastor. And welcome to Life Quest, Daniel.
Thanks very much, Dwight. My pleasure to be here.
Today we want to talk to you about your book, Summoned, Stepping Up to Live and Lead with Jesus. Why did you write this book at this time?
I wrote this book to help young men, especially men in their 20s, let's say 20s to early 30s, I wrote the book to encourage them to see that God is indeed at work in their lives, mm-hmm. and that our world desperately needs them to be in a life-giving relationship with Jesus and to lead with Jesus to do whatever work he's guiding them and calling them into. I've actually been working for 20-plus years with emerging leaders and established leaders, but since the early 90s with emerging leaders who were college students and then grad students and then young adults out of college. And a couple of years ago, one of my young men from a men's group in Charlottesville, Virginia, said, Daniel, why don't you write a book for guys like us and tell us the kinds of things, or put into writing the kinds of things that you've been talking to us about.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about your failures, because not very many people are writing about their failures. And we'd love to see in print form the kinds of lessons you've been talking about. So that's why now.
You use these terms, here's the title, summoned, and you talk about answering
yep.
God's call. Now, you know,
right.
we're called to nursing, we're called to be a pastor or a missionary. Am I called to be a plumber, an electrician?
Absolutely. I mean, that goes all the way back to Martin Luther, you know. Martin Luther saying, how does God get God's work done in the world in all the different spheres of society?
Mm-hmm.
He does it by calling people into all these different professions. So be you a farmer or a bread maker, you know, baker was one of his examples.
Yes.
That's God at work in the world. And, you know, Dwight, you've been a Christian for years, as have I, and we often hear or we get this impression that it's just those who are in, quote, church ministry, parachurch ministry,
right.
campus ministry, et cetera, missionaries who are called. No, we're all called by God. And God calls and sends us to join his great healing project in all different spheres of society.
And at one point, I get the impression, maybe more so, or we'd like to think more so in generations back, there was a sense of this. If I'm a carpenter, if I'm a car repair person, my craftsmanship is something, or internally, but it's also somehow related to my relationship with God.
Yeah. When you go to work as a craftsman, you're worshiping God through your work. So if you're working through spreadsheets and crunching numbers and as an accountant, or if you're working for Christian Brothers or some other automotive agency and
mm-hmm.
you're taking care of vehicles and making them safe to drive on today's highways, that's a noble, honorable work. And if God has gifted you for that, run with it.
I was interviewing one of the few Christian professors at a British university and a couple of years back, and I asked him, what are young people passionate about? And he said, unfortunately, Dwight, not too much. They want to know what they can take that will get them through quickly so they can make a lot of money. They're not manning the barricades for anything. That was a sad commentary, and hopefully it's changing.
You know, I think that is a sad commentary, and that is a particular perception that was offered on, you know, the Gen X /
mm-hmm.
Slacker generation. I know a number of those young adults, the Gen Xers who are now in early 40s, and I'm working with college students right now as young as 18 years old.
Uh-huh.
I think there's been a whole shift. This whole millennial generation, well, I shouldn't say whole, because it's not monolithic, right? There are individuals that comprise every generation, and while there may be some stereotypical demographics that are true of generations at large, I know numbers of young people who are wanting to make an impact in the world right now, who are digging wells in Africa, who are leading change campaigns on various causes around the world, and they want their lives to count.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, some of them want to make a bunch of money, but that's just a slice of that demographic pie.
You distinguish the words vocation and occupation. Unpack that a little bit.
Well, to me, vocation is a word that comes to us from the Latin vocare, or from the Greek kaleo. And vocation is the whole idea that God is calling us. And occupation is something that we do for a living, to make money. And our occupation and our vocation sometimes line up. And I tell the story in the book of a person who feels called to right the wrongs and the oppression that's going on against women. And this person's particular passion is for elementary-aged girls in South Africa.
Wow.
She can't get there yet. This young leader cannot be in South Africa yet.
Mm-hmm.
So she is working as she's working in management for an independent grocery co-op in the Northeast. That's her occupation. She's making a living doing that.
Okay.
But she volunteers her time at the University of Massachusetts Women's Center, where she can live out her call.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, some people would say part of our calling is to provide an income for ourselves and for our families if we have families. And I agree with that. But in the sense that I'm talking about being summoned by God, being called by Jesus to join him in his healing project, I'm using the word vocare there. And, you know, I work with a lot of 20-somethings who get really frustrated because they're not able to do it yet. They're not able to do that vocational piece yet because of various reasons, one of which might be God saying it's not time. You know, I've called you to something, and what I have for you right now is a period of shaping and preparation before you're released more fully into that. So they have to get comfortable with being where they are and focusing on where they are and learning all that they can until they're released more fully into that vocation.
Recognizing this summons, this call, sometimes comes in unusual ways.
Yes.
There are Bible examples of this. You also mentioned right at the beginning of your book that it can come through other people.
Absolutely. Just look in the scriptures at Esther, who intervened on behalf of her people and averted genocide. Well, how did Esther know that that might be God's call to her? It was through Mordecai, right? Mordecai stepped into her life and challenged her. How did Timothy know that one day he was going to be working in a church that Paul started in Ephesus? Well, it started with Paul inviting him to join his missionary band. So, yeah, you're right. There are times in the scriptures where, like a Moses with the burning bush, or like Paul with the bright lights on the road to Damascus, we recognize in an undeniable way that God is calling us. But there are also other ways through which God speaks, and God speaks through others to guide us into his work. I use the example of Nehemiah. Nehemiah was burdened by the situation of Jerusalem and what was going on with the people there. And through his period of prayer, he came to recognize inwardly that God was moving in his life, calling him, if you will, to do something about it. And I love the language that Nehemiah uses. When he meets with the nobles and leaders in Jerusalem, he talks to them about what God had put in his heart to do. So, you know, if you're uncomfortable with language like calling and summon, mm-hmm. just let me ask you the question. What has God put in your heart to do?
Yeah.
And go do that. Regardless of what you call it.
Yes.
Go do that work, you know?
Right. I liked what you mentioned here, and you mentioned it through the book. In fact, the whole book is created in that format of sometimes looking back. And
yeah.
you didn't recognize it at the time, but now looking back, you see God's hand guiding and
yeah.
directing and that sort of thing.
Yeah. And I think of Joseph. I mean, he's one of the primary examples in the scriptures. You know, when he reveals himself in Genesis 45 to his brothers and says, "I am Joseph," and they're all frightened, thinking, "Oh my gosh, this is our brother that we sold into slavery some
yeah.
30 years ago. He's going to take our lives right here." And he says, "You know, don't be afraid. It was what you intended for harm, God intended for good." You know, did Joseph have an awareness in those two dreams that those dreams were from God? When Joseph was, you know, thrown into the pit, when he was sold into slavery, did he have an idea that maybe God's hand was involved in all that? I doubt it. But looking back on his life, he did. And I agree. I think that we can look back in our stories and go, "Oh my goodness, I never realized that was the Lord who brought that person into my life," or "That was God meeting me through that experience." Mm-hmm. And as I look back, I can connect the dots and go, "Wow, there's really a storyline here to my life, and that storyline is pointing toward a certain future."
One of the things you suggest is that there are things maybe happening or that we're involved in that we need to kind of put away so that we can get going. How do we recognize what we need to surrender, what we need to lay down that's getting in the way of moving in the direction that both we and the Lord want us to do?
Well, I think we can ask. First of all, I think we know. If we're aware of God's call and we're hesitant, reluctant to step into it, to accept it, to embrace it,
mm-hmm.
We generally have a pretty good idea of why. You know, like, "I'm afraid here." Or I like being in charge of my life and I don't want to go in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we can take a look inside and ask ourselves, what's holding me back? What's keeping me from moving in that direction? And identify some of what those obstacles or barriers are. You know, you can look at some of the people in the scriptures who didn't want to accept God's call. You know, Moses complained that he couldn't speak well.
Yeah.
Jonah said, "God, I don't want to do this because I know how you're going to treat those people if I do it." You know, I mean, we can ask others, you know,
yeah.
"What do you think might be holding me back?" We don't get the clarity on our own, but clarity often comes through community. And our allies, our brothers and sisters, can help us think through what some of those things might be as well.
Which takes us to your chapter 5, which is about relationships. And not only the relationships that are positive, but coming to terms with ones that were not so much.
Yeah, unforgiveness.
Yeah.
Bitterness that we hold in our hearts. You know, I've had some friends who loved me enough to speak the truth to me. And if you're reading chapter 5, you know it was painful for me to hear at the time.
Right.
And it can still be painful, you know, as at this point in my life, years after that experience. But there's nothing like the love of a friend telling us the truth in love to help us see what might be getting in our way of following Jesus on a day-to-day basis.
But you know what, Daniel? Sometimes we hear more truth from our enemies than from our friends.
Yeah.
And we got to listen to that, too.
Yeah, there's, you know, one of the questions that I've been encouraged to ask in my life is, you know, before you move to that defensive posture,
mm-hmm.
could you just stop and ask yourself, where's the truth in what this person is saying to me?
Yeah.
There might be a kernel of truth, or there might be a bushel
yes.
of truth. And I need to be willing to hear that truth, right? Jesus said we would know the truth and the truth would set us free. And I'm stretching the context of what he said there. But, yeah, sometimes our enemies, sometimes God is speaking to us, right, through those who see things about us that we don't get along with, or who are more than those we don't get along with, who are hostile toward us.
And you also mentioned a real truism I have had to learn the hard way, and that is sometimes when we finally get to the point that we can extend forgiveness, that doesn't always lead to reconciliation.
Yeah, I don't think it does. You know, I've been helped immensely through Lewis Mead's book that I quote in my book, Forgive and Forget. It takes two people to reconcile.
Yeah.
I can forgive that person, but they may not be ready to forgive me. And I can hope for reconciliation and work toward it, but if they're not ready to do that, and, you know, I've got some relationships in my life where I've forgiven people,
mm-hmm.
and they've forgiven me, and I've wanted reconciliation, and they've been like, you know, I just want to keep the distance now. I don't have any animosity, but I don't
right.
really need to rebuild this relationship.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate, you know. I've got still some painful places related to that.
You, in chapter 6, talk about we all have some sort of baggage, things that maybe we didn't even recognize growing up or whatever. But he said, talk to your sister about what it was like growing up, and you'll see that you have different parents. You have different viewpoints.
Yeah.
And it was amazing how different it was. Of course, my sister was wrong. But, you know, it's just fascinating to see. And
uh-huh.
and taking a look at and defining what may be holding us back is what you're saying here, and recognizing those things, those attitudes that we've accepted.
Yeah, yeah, attitudes that we've accepted, sins that we've kept hidden, you know, secrets that we've held on to. Or just ways of relating with people that we've learned. You know, I talk about some of the counseling I went through for marriage, and I had learned things like don't talk, don't feel, don't rock the boat. And of course, you know, my wife grew up just the opposite. So when we came together, I had some ways of relating that I needed to shed, and I had some ways of relating that I needed to change, and I had some growing in that area, and it was all part of my baggage.
Like you was a preacher's kid, and I grew up with a little bit of this keeping up appearances and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and I realized that led me to feel that sometimes the rules didn't apply to me, but as long as I kept up the appearance, you know, it was okay. And that was problematic, and confronting that was interesting.
And you did confront it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, good for you. Yeah, I had to keep up appearances, too. I remember being told, you know, if you act like this, that can really harm your father's ministry.
Right.
If you're not at the church service tonight,
mm-hmm.
what will people think? So I have to make you be there, you know. You know, thankfully, I felt like I was let out of my cage a bit in high school, you know, where my mother in particular, she was the one who was a bit, you know, more harsh.
Yeah.
My mother was able to say, you know, you're 16 now, you're going to make some decisions on your own, and just keep in mind, you know, there it was again, just keep in mind
sure.
your father's ministry. But, so yeah, I mean, I had to be secretive about things. I mean, some things I didn't do just because I respected my dad.
Right.
And didn't want to bring that reproach on his name.
But yes.
other things I was just secretive about and prayed that they would never get out.
Yeah, my mother was certainly sure that if I was caught kissing Debbie behind the church, that somehow this would get into be headlines as to what the local preacher's kid was doing.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
At the end of your book, you have a section, a discussion guide. Tell our listeners about that.
Well, you know, each chapter ends with a few questions that, like, if you're reading through this on your own, you can answer some of those questions. But I wanted to put a discussion guide together so that if there are a group of readers somewhere who want to read the book together and kind of interact over its content, they don't have to come up with new questions on their own. So I've got a discussion guide that has four parts, one for each part of the book. And usually I have like 7 to 9 questions in each part of the discussion guide. And they can pick 3 to 4 to 5 that seem to fit their group, maybe better than some of the other questions. And they can just pick and choose ones that they think fit and work through those on their own.
Where can our listeners get a copy of the book?
Two places. Four places. The first two would be my website, summonsbook.com. So if you go to the book website, mm-hmm. and you click buy here, it will take you to the InterVarsity Press website.
Right.
Or if you go to my website, DanielAllenJr.com, you can also access the book website through it. Or you can just go to Amazon.com, you can go mm-hmm. to BarnesandNoble.com, ChristianBooksellers.com, and purchase the book through those websites.
The book is called Summoned, Stepping Up to Live and Lead with Jesus. The author is Daniel Allen Jr. Daniel, thank you so much for being with us today on LifeQuest.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to LifeQuest today. If you have questions or comments, you may send them to lifequest@lifetalk.net. My name is Dwight Lainhoff. Thank you.